Hi, my name is Ben Armstrong.
Hi, this is David Koch.
My name is Thomas Maurer.
Hi, I'm Donna Sarkar.
Hi, my name is Lana Montgomery.
Hi, I'm Seth Warres.
Hi, I'm Aaron Thomas.
I'm Jess Dodson.
Hi, I'm Rocky Heckman.
Hi, I'm Sonia Cuff.
Hi, I'm Troy Hunt.
Hello, this is Wally Mead.
My name is Reid Purvis.
Hi, I'm Lars Finn.
Hi, my name is Alan Birchall.
Hi, I'm Adam Fowler.
Hi, I'm Scott Guthrie, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
All the latest Microsoft Cloud news, as well as industry guest deep dive conversations. It's the Need to Know podcast, all thanks to Rode Microphones. The Need to Know podcast. Catch us on Twitter and Facebook, NGK Podcast, and online at podcasts.needtoknow.cloud.
Welcome along to a Need to Know podcast. This is episode 177. I'm joined once again by Brenton Johnson. Welcome.
Good to be back, Robert.
Yes, we're back again. This is our take two, our initial take. We had technical issues. That happens when you record podcasts. No matter how technically savvy you are, sometimes the machines can get their revenge on you, which seems to happen. So fingers crossed that we'll get through it completely. So again, let's start off where we did before and let you know that recently I was at a session with Mark Rusinovich in Sydney. So those of you who don't know Mark Rusinovich, he is the Chief Technology Officer for Azure. And again, he's a very well-known person from obviously doing system internals and then getting into the Azure and doing huge amounts of technical work there. So very interesting to see the technical levels, improvements, the hardware that Microsoft's investing when it comes to its data centers, some really impressive and really fast technology that they are bringing that will allow them to scale to much greater levels. He also announced that in conjunction with the Canberra Data Center organization, they're bringing two government-focused data centers into the Azure environment. And again, a little bit different in the fact that the data centers will be owned by a third party. They will allow people to potentially bring their own equipment into those data centers to hook it up to the Azure environment, but it's very much focused on traditional government, Australian government organizations, but also, you know, hospitals, emergency services, those sort of things as well. So good to see, like I said, you know, the Azure footprint being expanded in Australia. It's also being expanded internationally with data centers recently announced in the United Arab Emirates, Switzerland, and in Germany. So lots and lots of more data centers for Azure and Office 365. So that's been keeping me pretty busy this morning, plus a bit of travel around to do some training, especially on Microsoft 365 and in Azure all around the place. What about yourself, Brenton? What have you been up to?
Not too much. Just on that point before, I don't know if you've seen the news yet, but Azure's just been announced as protected data status or whatever, protected status.
For the government, yep, that was announced today.
So that's a pretty big deal. There's only four cloud providers in Australia that have that, and AWS is not one of them, and they're very, very keen to get on board. So being able to have... there's someone waving at me through the window. So being able to have sensitive information and going to your customers and saying, look, you know, here's what they had to do to get this status. Do you still think your on-premises solution is more secure? And if you're still having that conversation in 2018, I'd be questioning who your customers are.
Yeah, but again, there are some people still out there and we can still do hybrid, but again, when you look at the levels, you look at two-factor authentication, you look at some of the encryption, Microsoft allows you to bring your own key so you can encrypt it, you know, the way that you want it. Again, I think that we're seeing a very major shift to the concept of IT, computing as a service. So think of it like electricity, it's becoming a utility. And again, you really don't want to be managing, paying for, maintaining the servers on-prem. You need the ability to scale up and scale down with the flexibility and basically only pay for what you use. So again, in that environment, I think we're in the right place to be able to enable all that. And again, one of the things we are seeing, for example, that is an indication of the direction the cloud is taking is news from Microsoft and Telstra that they are bringing the cloud PSTN calling to Australia. So that means you'll be able to make phone calls directly from your desktop using the Skype for Business or your mobile. They will then connect through to landlines. Again, this is currently being worked on as a joint venture between Telstra and Microsoft. Hopefully we will see it opened up shortly to other providers to increase competition. It makes sense for them to bring it. Telstra being the largest telco in Australia, also with their previous agreement they had around Office 365, that can be, I suppose, potentially good or bad, but it makes sense to bring it to Telstra first. I think we hopefully will see that once they've pioneered it and worked out the kinks, then it will be opened up to more and more providers. What's your take, Brenton?
Yeah, pretty much the same as what you just said. Telstra has a million business customers, so they're uniquely placed to bring a technology like this into the mainstream. You know, they are known for telecommunications solutions, more so than they are known for cloud. And even particularly when you work with the Telstra guys, they try and push a lot of the cloud stuff over to you because they know you can deliver it better than they can. And they go, you know, we don't care as long as we get telecommunications. So I think it's a good move by Office 365 to start with Telstra, work out the kinks. Then all the brand damage can go on Telstra. And then once all the kinks are worked out, we know how it works in the Australian landscape, then open it up to a few more people, get them on board, and then eventually everybody will end up with some form of this. I think this is another one of those killer apps that's coming. Talking to Taz, he was super excited, said it's really simple to hook up overseas. So once the technology comes to us and we have our choice of provider, I think that will be a very exciting time.
Well, I think, again, it gives people a lot more options. It also brings everything under one login to manage all this. Now, the important thing to point out is that the cloud PSTN, cloud PBX, all that sort of stuff is only available with the enterprise plans. It's not available with the business plan. So if you're out there with business premium or business essentials or something like that, unfortunately, it's not going to be able to work with those plans. You'll need to go to the enterprise arrangement to enable that when it does become available. So again, make sure that you're ready for that. You've got the resources, you've got the ability to implement it rather than having to go in there and start trying to change things to get it all working. So enterprise only for any of this cloud, PSTN and PBX sort of functionality. Now, we'll put all the links to the announcements and some articles there. I'll give you more information about this. The cost of the plan seems to be pretty good. It's very competitive and, again, something to consider. And, again, hopefully we'll see it roll out to additional providers in a very short period of time. Now, another thing Microsoft has turned on and enabled is HubSites. So HubSites is a special SharePoint site that allows you to connect to other SharePoint sites and bring a consistent navigation look and feel. So it, again, you're building this intranet using a hub site which you connect to pre-existing Microsoft Teams, to standalone SharePoint sites, to group sites, to whatever. So the way you do that at the moment is with PowerShell. We seem that we will get the ability to do that in the admin console in the very near future, but at this stage it's a simple PowerShell command to enable that, but it's going to give you that consistent look and feel. And remember, I would suggest that a good rule of thumb, a good best practice when creating these environments is to keep things, the structure, very flat. So you don't want to have folders within folders within folders, as we typically see on file servers. We want to keep that basically to a document library and one folder level as the maximum beyond that. And again, the idea here is the flatter it is, the easier the information is to be found. And going forward, that more and more information is either going to be surfaced via an algorithm because it knows what you want to work on, or basically you're going to use search. So I think we spoke about this before, Brenton, but again, you would be in agreement that we want to keep those structures as flat as possible and get away from these really, really complex, deep structures that we've seen on traditional file servers.
Yeah, look, if we're talking digital transformation, that's really a big part of digital transformation is flattening out the structure. So I don't know if anyone was following me back in these days, but I did a whole expose when ANZ moved to Agile. So not in their branches so much, but out in their product development teams, they have teams of 10 people centered around customer problems. This is no different in principle. What we're trying to do is bring the information flatter, like you exactly what you were saying before. And by that, then you enable things like search. And before we got knocked off temporarily, we were talking about how back in the day, Yahoo used to run around and put every website in the world in categories. So if you had the Doberman dog, it could be 5, 6, 7 layers deep. So it'd be under, you know, lands, animals, animals, land animals, mammals, dogs, large dogs, etc., etc. So that's what's fundamentally shifted. We've moved to things like search, and now with the next generation, so search was 15 years ago, now with the next generation, as you were saying before, Robert, it's all about AI going out, contextually understanding who you are and what you're doing, and going, hey, you need this document for this meeting you're about to go into. Hey, you've been in this meeting. We realize this person's working on this document, and it's related to this meeting. We believe you need access to that too. Here's a suggested company resource. And in the file and folder structure, you can spend a lot of time running around trying to find exactly, is this in project A? Is this in sales folder? Is this in customer folder? Is this in wherever? Moving away from that to tags, metadata, etc., is always a good step in the right direction.
Yeah, and I think, like I said, the concept here is it's a different way of looking at things. It's again, as you mentioned, the drinking phrase of the day, digital transformation. But you really need to use a different approach to get the most out of these products. Again, the concept of having lots of time on structure is not that important. It's much more ad hoc because search is going to index everything. The algorithm is going to push information to us as long as it's in an environment like Office 365 under compliance and whatnot, then we're going to have those sort of abilities as well. So again, a slightly different approach when it comes to doing collaboration, but again, the main thing to think of here is you've got the flexibility. It will change over time. You can start with a deeper structure, but again, you need to try and aim for best practice, which is the flattest structure that you can get, and you use items such as metadata and tagging to basically replace a lot of the categorization that you've done using the traditional folders. All right, I hear there's some updates and some new things in Planner. What's happening there?
Yeah, so Planner's getting guest access, very, very important. The example I was using there was, I know a guy who does project management, IT project management. He runs his projects out of Microsoft Project in the cloud, prints out amazing Gantt charts and incredible management reports and all of this sort of stuff. But when he goes and talks to the executive, they go, oh, what the hell is all of this? I'm not a project manager. Why do I need all this information? So what he's done now is he pushes that information into Planner. And with Planner, he can give a one-page summary that's always up to date to the executive and go, here's where all the projects are. Here's what's out of date. Here's overdue. Here's not, etc. And they go, oh, I instantly understand why you're asking for more resources or this or that, right? So being able to bring in guest access allows you to bring in, other people from other companies, consultants to help with the workflow. I think it's a really important way for you if you're in the process of digital transformation and trying to get rid of email, rather than trying to come out of Planner, email a consultant, email a third party. You can just bring them straight into Planner, your work off the same source of truth, and happy days.
Cool. All right. So I've got some Azure news here because we shouldn't forget that is also changing and updating. So one of the first things here is that Azure Files now has snapshot ability in general availability. So that means that when you use the Azure SMB file service, which allows you to map a storage location in Azure to a drive letter on any modern workstation and store files like you would in a file server, you can now use the snapshot capability to take regular differential backups so that if you do need to recover a file, you can just again mount a snapshot and you recover that. One of the other things I'd point out is that it's very important, I think, to look at the SMB file share ability in Azure combined with the Azure File Sync. So the Azure File Sync allows you to put an agent on servers, synchronize the files into Azure SMB file shares, which can then be backed up using this new snapshotting ability. And you can share that information with users who access it from the cloud, who access it on-prem. The syncing ability is intelligent. And again, it's going to give you the optimal results. Remember that the OneDrive for Business Sync client is not supported on server machines. So it's designed as a personal solution for users individually to sync things to their OneDrive and to SharePoint sites generally. But it's not designed as a bulk sync tool, and it's not designed as a tool to sit on a file server. That, if you need that capability, I'd be looking at the Azure Sync service, and also the Azure SMB file shares is a good option there. What else have we got, Brenton?
Oh, look, we're seeing a consolidation of Yammer networks. So this is a big change that you will need to take action on if you are currently using Yammer across multiple domains. Robert can give you a bit more of the background, but essentially, if you know that your customers are in this situation, I would be going out there, taking the front foot. I've got a knowledge base article that'll be included in the show notes, but take the front foot, go out there, talk to your customers. We're on top of this. We're your Office 365 experts. You can never leave us. Here's how we're going to help you transition. Now, data won't be lost, but there may be some considerations that you might want to take into account, so make sure you jump onto that.
So the idea here is that a Yammer network typically is tied to a domain. So if you had a number of custom domains in your Office 365 environment, you would have got a number of different Yammer networks tied to those domains. They're basically consolidating those, probably all under the primary domain that you have for your tenant. And that means that they'll probably appear as groups or whatever. But again, read the guidance that we'll put in the show notes. And again, remember that the idea here is simplification. And again, if they all live under a single parent, then it's going to make access a lot easier as we see these sort of environments becoming, more aligned with each other. So again, everything from a single point, we talked about a hub site being a single point, we talk about that connecting to Teams, Yammer's the same sort of deal. So that's what the consolidation's for, that's the benefit. And it's really going to only affect tenants that have had multiple custom domains in there. So if that's you, again, read the guidance, make sure that you understand what's happening and how that's going to take place. Basically, it's a structural change, there's no data or anything that's really going to change. It's just a matter of, instead of having three independent networks under three custom domains, they all live under the primary one. So again, not a huge amount of work that needs to be done, but just again, read the guidance to make sure you understand exactly what's happening.
My idea now, around this, Robert, would be say you run a multinational company, you've got an office in New Zealand and an office in Australia, you have a network for the New Zealand under the .co.u whatever. And in Australia, you have a different network. So those two are going to come together, get on the front foot, go talk to your customers.
Yeah, just make sure they understand the navigation shouldn't be, but it's always good, like Brenton says, to get on the front foot. So some new Azure stuff that I'll talk to you about as well. We've got private DNS zones are now available in preview. So Azure has a DNS service, which I highly recommend, and you can use it to put your Office 365 records in there, but you can also now set up private DNS zones. So if you have internal infrastructure you want to keep inside Azure and don't want requests to go outside of the public internet, you can begin to use these private DNS zones. Another add-on that Microsoft has given us is the ability to access Azure machines using a serial console. So think of this like an ILO access on a traditional server. So if the server's console gets hung up, or the keyboard doesn't work, or you just can't get access to the screen, or something, can't see what's going on in the server, you can use this serial access to basically go in and perform actions on that server. So again, when you apply updates, there are situations in Azure Virtual Machines when, again, the update may cause some issues and you can't get to your virtual machine. Now, we've got the ability here to access that virtual machine using the serial console. You'll find that option on the individual virtual machine towards the bottom there, called the serial console. So go in and have a look at that. What else have we got, Brenton?
We've got an updated feature to LinkedIn integration with Microsoft apps. So this isn't coming to Australia yet, but I think it's something that you guys need to be thinking about when you're putting together your strategies. So the marketing department's probably quite concerned, particularly if you're in a B2B sales situation or whatever. How uniform is the LinkedIn strategy across the company? Is this personal profiles that everybody has and put pictures of them up in a bikini or something a bit inappropriate for LinkedIn, but it's their personal profile, it doesn't reflect on the company? That's all going to change once LinkedIn becomes fully integrated with Office 365. So I think one of the things I was talking about here was hover cards. So you hover over someone's email account, it will come up with their photo from LinkedIn, or pull information from LinkedIn, current employer. If they hover over a card and it says looking for new employment because they haven't updated it since they started working with you, this is going to become real business concern. So what I would be recommending is you start talking to your customers about putting a LinkedIn strategy into your IT strategy. And if you want to see a company that does it better than anybody, I'd be getting on there and see if you can find all the employees of Leap. You go on there, every single employee has a professional photo of them with an orange background. So just things like that that are really going to amplify your perceived value to the marketplace. These are things you can go to customers with and say, hey, I'm in IT, but we're across all of this. You know, we're not just across making sure your inbox doesn't get a bit full.
I think the thing here is, again, Microsoft obviously purchased LinkedIn for a couple of $1 billion recently. The integration, obviously the value of LinkedIn is the networking, who's connected to who. You'll be able to use it to link in your existing employees, their resources, their experience, their information can be brought in, but also you'll be able to use it to, you know, potentially look for recruits, to look at customer information as well, people that send you emails, all that stuff that Brenton mentioned. Again, it's just going to be a simple ability now to integrate all that. And again, when you look at it from a CRM sort of angle, again, that's really, really powerful. It means that all the users will get, you know, access to this CRM capability that is already, you know, well developed in LinkedIn. So we would probably both suggest that make sure that you do have your own LinkedIn profile up to date. You do have a picture, professional picture in there. You are making sure that it, again, is something that you highlight, because LinkedIn obviously is a professional network, although it has turned into a bit of a pictures of kittens and things that we eat of late. So hopefully they will crack down on that a little bit. But I think that it's, as you mentioned, the integration with Office 365 is going to surface a lot of this stuff and make sure that it's presented professionally. And again, it's going to be the face of your business. A lot of people, after you do some networking, they take your business card and go and look at your profile in LinkedIn. So please make sure that that is up to date, relevant, and again, put your best foot forward in that case. What else have we got here? So some of the other things that I would mention here, basically we're seeing a bit of a change in the Microsoft hierarchy. So one of the things that was announced recently was that Microsoft is going to basically reorganize the way that its divisions are. So the Windows chief, Terry Myerson, is basically leaving Microsoft. And what we're seeing now is that it's going to reorganize the way that it presents itself, and it's going to establish two main engineering teams, and they're going to be focused on basically experiences and devices and the cloud and AI platforms. All right, so again, very interesting that Terry Myerson, who was the vice president of Windows and Devices Group, been at Microsoft for around 21 years, it says here, he is basically leaving Microsoft. And another indication of the changes that I think are being forced on the market. And good on Microsoft for, again, being proactive in this and trying to simplify its offerings and keep up to date with what's going on. So we'll put a link in the show notes. You can read the email that Satya Nadella sent out to all the employees explaining this and what's going on. It's worthwhile having a read to understand the direction Microsoft's going in. And I think, again, it's commendable that Microsoft, again, is focusing, again, on simplifying a lot of this stuff and trying to, again, get as lean as possible. Anything else from you there, Brenton?
You've got a link here about AI. which I thought was very important. So the Microsoft artificial intelligence landscape, what to use and when and why and all of that sort of thing. So do you have some thoughts on that, Robert?
So look, at the end of the day, if you aren't aware, the other drinking word besides digital transformation these days is AI. And that is a very broad and encompassing term. It's like, what exactly is AI? Back in the day, we probably considered Clippy to be AI. Maybe not intelligent, but certainly artificial. Long live Clippy. But I think that that can get very confusing because there are so many different technologies all being pulled together to solve problems. So I think the article that I've put in here around the Microsoft AI landscape is going to give you a bit better idea of basically when to use what. So, you know, the AI, I think, is going to become more and more important, and it's going to be basically available in more and more services. The reason for this is the cloud allows, you know, vast amounts of storage, vast amounts of on-demand compute to solve these sort of problems, to troll through the data and find matches, solutions, patterns, all that sort of stuff. And we're going to see this growing now. Again, it may not seem relevant to a smaller business, but I can assure you it really is. So things like, you know, who's going to your website? Where are they coming from? You know, if you run specials, what influence does that have on the market? You know, who's reading your emails? All that sort of stuff, all this data is going to be vastly important. And also, if you're looking at the Internet of Things, huge volumes of data from all sorts of devices are going to be pumped into computing resources like Azure. And again, we need to get some ROI out of it. So again, have a look at that article that we'll put in the show notes and give you an idea of how Microsoft's using its AI. And again, the idea of when it's recommending basically what you should be using. So again, certainly recommend you have a look at AI as one of these transformational products that is coming around. And again, we recommend that all people, IT providers and businesses, be across the opportunities it could present for you.
Yeah, I think AI is an interesting one because it's a little bit unique in some ways. So with most IT projects, you go out there, you deliver the solution, and the customer gets the value almost instantly. With AI, what's been shown is that you need to teach the AI how to think and how to work. So if you are a big YouTube junkie like me, you'll be familiar with CPG Grey, who's a YouTuber over in Great Britain, and he has a whole heap of great videos on AI and a whole bunch of other stuff. But one of the things is how AI works, so I definitely get you to check that out. But it's essentially computers teaching computers teaching computers. So if you have those mid-market customers who will use AI in the future, you need to go and have a talk to them today and go, well, you know, if we wait 3 years, the AI is going to be 3 years behind. If someone does it today and you do it in 3 years' time, you won't put in a better solution necessarily, which has been very different to most IT projects where, you know, if you wait, you can generally make a bigger leap forward. So this is something that you need to go and start talking to your customers about. If you don't have the capacity to deliver it, find someone who can. Even just stuff like Power BI is, you know, AI in a sense, you know, how we get the information in and interpret it and send it off. So anyway, I'm going on a bit of a tangent here. Should we keep moving?
I think we probably need to keep moving, but I think we probably need to look at rounding off. I think you've got one more story here that you can talk about when it comes to Cloudflare. So why don't you take the lead there and let people know about this option?
Yep, so I'm a massive Cloudflare friend. I have all my customers' DNS sitting in Cloudflare. Makes your computer, makes your website faster, more secure. Their firewall's amazing for blocking denial of service attacks and other threats to your website, reporting, etc. All free out of the box, business plan, it's not that expensive. They have taken a lead on the internet, and they've now own or partner with 1.1.1.1. So everyone is familiar with 8.8.8.8. That's what you ping when you're trying to troubleshoot something, or 8.8.4.4, which is the Google DNS servers. Cloudflare is saying their DNS servers are faster, they're private, and they're a hell of a lot better than the ISP ones that everybody else gets. So One of the big things I'll always do is, whether you use Google, whether you use whoever, OpenDNS or someone else, do not use the ISP DNS servers. If they have a problem with their DNS servers, your customer's not going to be able to use the internet appropriately. You're going to get a phone call. Always change it to something other than Telstra or whoever, telco, and they're all pretty much the same in this boat. DNS servers is not what they do for a living. Move it into Google. If Google's DNS servers go down, the whole world comes to an end, similar to like if Microsoft Office 365 goes down, whole world comes to an end. So they got much more vested interest in keeping those services up, and they employ the best engineers in the world. So Cloudflare's in that bucket to a certain extent. They're nowhere near as big, but they're very, very good at what they do. So check it out. Decide whether that's right for you. It certainly aligns very much with what we're trying to achieve. But you might want to stick to OpenDNS or pay a third party supplier or whatever you want to do to make it all work and be reliable.
I saw a couple of articles that talked about the guy did a speed test. So he's tested the DNS resolutions and access speeds in a number of different locations around the world. And basically, yes, the Cloudflare stuff came up trumps in all cases. It was interesting that the resolution speeds in Sydney tended to be the slowest. They were still faster, but they tend to be slowest overall. So again, must have been someone downloading something on Netflix that day. So, but certainly have a look at it, 1.1.1, and we'll put the link. I delivered a 1, did I? So
yeah. 4 so ones, it was launched on April 1st, which in America is 4/1. It's just a way of writing 1.1. Or, yeah, anyway, programmer joke.
These Americans and their back to front dates. One day they'll put their vowels back in the words, and we'll have the Queen's English across the world again. But anyway, we live in hope. I think that we want to probably keep this episode a bit short, because we did tend to go a bit long last time, which hopefully hasn't hurt the ratings too much. But we certainly have some interesting episodes upcoming, probably around a deeper dive into Office 365 security. Again, what it does, what's set up by default, what you can tweak to make it even more secure. Looking at getting some experts on to talk about Microsoft 365 that will give you some more ideas about security and extending it out to your devices, as well as improving it with things like Azure AD. But I think at this stage, we probably need to let the ladies and gentlemen go and give them a bit of an early mark so that they can get on with their day and be ready for our next in-depth episode. What do you reckon?
Sounds like a plan.
All right. So as always, Brendan, how can people get in contact with you, send you those requests and questions, both appropriate and inappropriate questions? How can they do that?
Yep. So I'm pretty easy to find. It's just Brenton Johnson, straight into Google or Bing, whichever you pick is your poison. BrentonJohnson.com as well. So that has a link to all my social media stuff. As Robert alluded to on the previous recording that you won't listen to, we did talk about getting some listeners to call in and ask us some questions. So if you can send us some questions, either appropriate or inappropriate, we would love to hear from you. We'd love to answer them on stream. If you say, okay, well, we didn't understand that from last episode, or here's something I've been reading about that I want to discuss on the show, we really want to hear from you. We want to make it
Or maybe we get an expert on that topic as well. That's another thing that we could potentially do. That's so call true. Out some topics, and we'll reach out and find some real experts on some of this stuff to give you a deep dive. So that's another option as well. If you let us know, we can arrange that.
Yeah, exactly. Just send us the questions and we'll figure out what to do with them.
Cool. All right. So the best place, if you're an old traditional keyboard person that doesn't do social, you can send us an email at feedback@needtoknow.cloud. To access me, you can again do that on the Twitter @DirectorCIA. We'll make sure that all the links from this episode are put up for your usage. And we again thank you very much for taking the time to listen to our podcast. Don't forget to give us some feedback. Let us know what you want to see, what directions, what deep dives you want us to cover, and potentially what guests you'd like to hear from. I think that Brenton has now settled in well enough that we can now look at expanding it and getting some other people on board to work with him, so that we can, again, expand his horizon. So again, thank you very much, Brenton, for your input and also the topics you've spoken about today. I think it's been worthwhile and there's a lot of great information there that we're covering. So hopefully everybody thinks the same. And I would suggest that with that, we're done for this episode. Thank you very much for listening to another episode of the Need to Know podcast.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Office 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selection available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.